beloved Muslims, friends, relatives of the blessed couple here today, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. We begin with dua al-fatiha. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki Yawmiddin. Iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in. Ihdinas siratal mustaqim. Siratal ladhina an'amta 'alayhim ghayril maghdubi 'alayhim waladdallin. Amin. On this lovely afternoon in Harlem, we are witnessing the Islamic marriage of Brother Fakhruddin Abdul Hakim and Sister Zakia Muhammad. I find the verse that is written in the invitation to be most appropriate for this occasion. This verse is from the Quran, chapter 3, and the chapter called An-Nisa, the women, and verse 21. Translation by Yusuf Ali. It reads, "And among his signs is this, that he created for you mates from among yourselves, that you may dwell in tranquility with them. And he has put love and mercy between your hearts. Verily, and that are signs for those who reflect." Allah says in the Quran also that he has created a human being, both male and female, of clay, of water and clay, of water and clay. These poetic terms, water and clay, refer to the common nature of the man and woman. Water being symbolic of the spiritual nature of the mind and soul, our soul, and clay being symbolic of the nature of the intellect. And the nature of the intellect is growth, and that growth can't come without some kind of discipline. When we speak of intellect and soul, we are speaking of one entity, our one self, as it is translated in the Quran. Clay, except to be formed, it is manageable. It accepts to be given a particular form, a definite form. Water also accepts to be formed, to be given a form. But it has to be contained constantly. Whereas clay can be given a form and then left, and it will hold its form. We find that the intellect is of that nature. Proper instructions, if we follow them, permits us to retain our discipline, to keep our discipline. Water needs a constant container to hold it. And this is the referring to the spiritual nature of the conscience of the human being. Our conscience will roam. Our thoughts will roam. Our mind will travel. And often it's very hard to keep our thoughts where they should be. Accepting the laws of Al-Islam, the guidance of the Quran, enable us to keep our thoughts in some kind of framework. Our thoughts are given to some kind of framework. And the Islamic frame for our thoughts, for our thinking, is the protection for our wandering minds. I have mentioned this nature of both the male and the female to remind you today that women desire freedom just as men desire freedom. Men have the nature to move out, to leave their immediate surroundings. They have the nature to run like the river, or to rise up like the clouds. And women have the same nature. A Muslim should never accept that backward idea that is charged to the so-called orthodox world of Al-Islam, that woman is to remain in her house, or that woman is to be domesticated like a domesticated animal. In the days of Prophet Muhammad, woman was liberated. She was given true liberty. She was given a liberty befitting her noble nature. She was given political freedom. She was given freedom to engage in business, to own business, to hire men and women. Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, when he was called to be a messenger of Almighty God, he was working for his wife, Khadija. Khadija was a businesswoman, and Prophet Muhammad was working for her. Prophet Muhammad extended that freedom, that precious freedom, to all women, and made it a law that no woman be denied her inheritance, her economic or financial inheritance, and that no woman be denied the opportunity or the right to engage in business. Also, the right of public address was given to the woman, the right to participate politically in the affairs of the state, to influence the shaping of the nation. On one occasion, one common woman of a locality, she questioned the behavior of the chief ruler of the Islamic State. And he accepted her criticism and promised her that he would conform to what she reminded him of, to the law, to the duty that she brought to his attention. He made this apology and promised that he would conform in the public. Perhaps you have heard that the woman's voice is to only be heard in the church. Well, that's not true of the mosque. This woman spoke in the public, and she brought the ruler's attention to something he had neglected in his rule of the state, of the Islamic State, and the ruler submitted to her criticism. Women have been very much a part of the growth of Al-Islam. We could recite to you the names of many women who helped the early development of the community of Islam under Prophet Muhammad, upon him be peace. Today in Iran, We see the woman out front. The media does not give much attention to that, but you can see in the demonstrations that women are out front. Those women are not just being used to demonstrate. Those women are very much a part of the Iranian Islamic revival. They are very much a part of it. They are the ones who are firing the spirit of the men. They are firing the spirit of their men. They are the ones who brought charges against the ugly regime of the ex-Shah. They are the ones who are pressing forward for freedom, justice, and equality, for the end of all persecution of their religion, and for freedom, justice, and equality in their society. This is the true Islamic spirit that we see in the women of Iran. And the media would like to twist that picture and make us think that the women have been set back, that their freedom have been taken from them, that they have lost rights since the Ayatollah Khomeini rule came into effect. And that's farthest from being true. These women are part of the revival, they are part of the revolution that have brought the end of the persecution of their religion and freedom in al-Islam to the community or to the people of Iran. I didn't mention Iran for us to pattern ourselves after the Iranians, but that's one feature that we see there in Iran of the society that is in accord with our religion, the religion al-Islam. The Quran recognizes the equality and the inequality of the male and the female. The Quran tells us that we are of one self, one nefs, one self, one and the same self. When we refer to ourselves, we say, myself. This self is the same for both male and female. When I say myself, I might be talking about something that is physically happening in my life. I may be talking about something that is mentally happening in my life. And I may be talking about something that is spiritually happening in my life. And I use the same term, self. So how do you feel, brother? Well, I don't feel too good myself. And it might be in my body, a physical body, it might be in my intellect, it might be in the mind, or it might be in the soul or the spirit. This self incorporates or includes these three aspects or these three facets or whatever we can call them of the total self. The flesh, the physical, the mental, and the spirit. And our Quran says that Allah, the Almighty, who created everything, that He has created the male and the female from one self. That means that we are biologically the same, that we are mentally the same, that we are spiritually the same. How can anyone in this religion, knowing that, separate the woman as a different creation from the man and relegate her to some inferior status in society? He can't do that, knowing the truth of this religion. So we don't see any degree of inequality in the male and the female when it comes to the physical, biological potential, or the mental, the intellectual potential, the spiritual potential. You may say, well, why is it that no woman has ever been a prophet? But women have been the mothers of prophets. Women have raised prophets before they became prophets. They raised the little children, raised the little men, you see? And the woman influence have been the first step toward his prophethood. If it wasn't for Mary, you think Jesus could have been the prophet he was? No. So in al-Islam, we see them both as being the same. But there is an area of inequality. Where is that? It is not in their nature. We have the same nature. It is not in our human potential. We have the same human potential. We have the same human capacity to do good and to do bad. So where is it? to excel intellectually or to fail. We have the same capacity. But where is that inequality? Allah tells us in the Quran that man has a degree of superiority, a degree of superiority over the woman in or by reasoning or virtue of his physical strength, and by virtue of the amassing of wealth. Amassing of wealth. How have the man been able to amass so much wealth? It is because the man, historically, because of the difference in the physiology of the two, he has been freer physically than the woman. The woman, when she has a young baby, she's tied up for 9 months carrying the baby, most likely, normally, and then she's tied up for about 2 years before she can wean the child, and she has to look out for him or have somebody else look out for him. So if women are regularly having children, are bearing young, then much of that time is confined to the raising or the culturing and development of new life. They're confined physically. If they weren't so confined, then the woman would have had as much training physically as the man. She would be free to go out there and chop down trees and dig up the yard ground and cross the river, build a boat and cross the river, ride the horse. She would be free to do those things. But she's not free to do those things because her physiology, not her biology, you are the same biologically, you're the same. But her physiology, in simple language, her sex. She has a sex function to perform. And her sex function that she has to perform demands that she give much of her life to caring for new life. To caring for new life. Because of that, her duties are not the same physically as the male duties. Now, you will find the exception. This is the rule, but there is the exception. Some women in their normal duties use more muscles than some men in their normal duties. So you will find some women that this won't apply to in respect of the mate that they have, you see. You'll find some that this won't apply to. We won't find him with the superior physical strength. Maybe his wife take exercise with him in the morning. Maybe she picks him up and take exercise with him in the morning. We don't know, you see. And then there was also the material exception. There are some women who have amassed more wealth than the men. But as a general rule, the man has the superior physical strength, and the man has the majority or the great amount of the wealth, the greater amount of the wealth, because he has been free to explore the world, to accumulate wealth, to use his physical tools and his mental tools to develop the earth, to develop the resources. Therefore, he's in that superior position. Since man, generally speaking, is in that superior position throughout the world, not just in America or in the West, throughout the world, then it is no more than intelligent on our part to accept that women have a specific role distinguished from that of a man in public life. Now, we don't have the case here, but sometime I'm officiating over a wedding, and the sister is the physical superior. It doesn't happen too often, but sometimes the sister is the physical superior. And I have to caution the couple and caution the brother, so the sister will know not to use that superiority because that's not the order of the world. She's just the exception, you see. So I have to caution her, please, sister, don't use that superiority. Because it's not the order of the world. So men are maintainers of women because of their physical strength and because of the wealth they amass. That's justice. If you have physical strength, you should take care of the weaker, who are weaker physically. You should go out and do the hard labor. Take care of the weaker, who are physically weaker. And if you have a superior wealth, then you should care for those who have less wealth. But al-Islam does not like to see such inequality in regards to wealth continue. Al-Islam wants to see just distribution of wealth. So how has it done this? It has done it by making women, by giving women the right of inheritance, to inherit a portion of the wealth. Her share of the inheritance is less than that of a male. Why? Because most women in our world, as we know it, will be taken care of by some man. She will marry and some man will provide for her. Most men are expected, and I would say all of us are expected to. We have this burden on our mind, whether society reminds us of it or not. We are expected to take care of our wives. The man is expected to get out and earn a living and find some means to bring in food and clothes and to have some shelter for his wife and his family, you see. This burden falls directly on the man. And these late doctors of psychology and sociology, they are saying that one reason why males don't outlive females is because of this constant burden on their mind. They say that it produced a lot of stress in the life of the male. You don't have to suffer this consciously. It can be a subconscious strain on your mind. You won't be aware of it in your daily going about. But nevertheless, you have that strain on your mind that you should be taking care of a woman. See? And if you're not able to take care of that woman, you wonder how come you have headaches sometimes. You wonder how come you don't have the spirit to do anything sometimes. You wonder how come you want to commit suicide sometimes. It's because the federal government, with its welfare system, is taking care of your women. And you don't have any male role anymore at home. So a lot of us who are just out of jobs, can't get jobs, and the wife is getting those welfare checks, we are suffering and don't know it. Somewhere she has a boyfriend or a husband. And that poor man is suffering because Uncle Sam is the man with his woman, you see, is the man at his home, at her apartment. He's the man. He is taking care of that responsibility that society has placed on every male, and that is the responsibility to bring the physical needs to the woman, you see? So that's a big problem, and I hope we overcome that one day. Men are maintainers of women because of their physical strength and the wealth they amass. Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, when he became leader in Arabia, which is called Jahiliyyah, which means backward, ignorant society, when he became the leader, he began to give the people the revelation that he received from God and correct the injustices that the woman was suffering in that Jahiliyyah, our ignorant society. Women had no rights hardly at all. Female girls were not even wanted. The ignorant pagan Arabs taking great pride in the birth of sons would sometimes have the females killed at birth. And the Quran mentioned the very horrible, an unbelievable crime of burying the daughters alive. Burying the daughters alive. Also, they had no respect for their mothers because they would insult their wives through their mothers. They would insult their wives through their mothers. They would tell the woman when they were through with her and didn't want to live with her anymore, they wouldn't say, "I divorce you." They would say, "Be to me as my mother's back." So it shows they had no respect for females, not even for their mothers. for their wives, not for their wives, and not for their mothers. The Quran mentions that ignorance on the part of the males, and it tells them, do not divorce women in such manner. They are not your mothers. They are your wives. The women are your wives and not your mothers. What the men were saying in their ignorance is that as I'm not attracted physically to my mother, I'm not attracted physically to you anymore. So be gone, woman. This is the end of our marriage. What does that tell us about the man, the male mind in that society? It tells us that the men in that society regarded the woman just as some kind of gratification for their sexual lust. The woman wasn't seen as a real mate. She was seen just as something to satisfy the sexual urge, the sexual lust. And that's why he said, when he's through with her, be to me as my mother's back is to me. Meaning I don't have any sexual desire for you anymore. That was the way they divorced the people. Now, we have to be careful in this society, because this society used woman in the same sense. Although it's not called Jahiliyyah, it uses the woman in the same way. All the while, we're seeing the woman on TV, in the commercial signs, the advertisement. We're seeing her all the time presented as an object of sexual excitation. Sexual excitation. So she's treated as an object for lust. And it's very easy for us to regard women as just a tool or something to satisfy our sexual urges. We have to be careful of that and understand that Muslims are not supposed to marry out of sexual desire. Allah said in the Quran, do not marry out of lust. That means out of sexual desire only. No matter how attractive a sister is to me physically, she appeals to me very strongly physically. That's not grounds for marriage. That's not reason to marry her. That's only one facet of that total self. That's just the physical facet. That total self require all of them. Mentally, I must be attracted to her mentally. I must like her thinking. I must like her mind. She must like my mind, my thinking, as well as my body. I must like her mind as well as her body. Then I should also like her spirit. Her spirit might be for God. My spirit is not for God, that doesn't make no good match. Her spirit is for God and my spirit is not for God, that's not going to be a good match. You see? My spirit might be for race cars. And her spirit is for building a home and sending her children to college. But I don't care about sending children to college. I don't even care about having children. I'm the race car freak. That wouldn't make no good marriage. So the spirit should be compatible. The intellect should be compatible. And the physical attraction should be there. But if you have to sacrifice any of them, you sacrifice the physical attraction, because physical attraction can come as a result of loving each other mentally and spiritually. Yes. That's what we should understand about the Islamic marriage. The Islamic marriage is not a marriage of a facet of life. It's a marriage of the total life. You become one. Hold it together. Now we come to the point of obedience. We don't go around telling women, you should obey me. I'm the man. You should obey me. But Allah says that an obedient wife to his prophet, obedient wife is very precious. And an obedient wife, she will be rewarded by God, and most likely she will have the paradise. Obedient wife. However, her obedience is not directly to her husband. Her obedience is directly to Allah. So we have a need for obedience on the part of the wife. Natural thinking, we still can say to women, you should obey your husbands. They were
rebel, certainly they rebel because this is the order of American society. But the nature hasn't gone. The women still know. Yes, I should obey him. Even if she can whip him physically, she still feels, yes, I should obey him. But he ought to have some rules that work for both of them, that both of them can look at and understand. It should be some kind of a constitution. That constitution is the Quran. We look at the Quran, and the Quran say the duty of the woman is this to the male, the duty of the Muslim. Quran, and the Quran say the duty of the woman is this to the male, the duty of the Muslim sister is this. If the brother raise up the rod of the Quranic law, the sister should obey. But if he raises up his own rod, the sister should say, hey, what's that you got in your hand? In respecting your mutual rights, because each of you have rights, you accept to obey Allah as regards the obligation you owe to each other. It's as simple as that. We owe each other something. We owe each other certain obligations. And we look to the rule of Allah, to the Quranic law, for that light and understanding. Allah says in the Quran, all people or all humanity, reverence your guardian, Lord, who created you from a single self and created from it its mate and spread from both many men and women. And reverence Allah, from whom you seek your mutual rights. Surely Allah is ever a watcher over you. Dear beloved people, we have just read from the Quran, this verse that I mentioned earlier, referring to the total self, the nafs. This nafs is one nafs. Nafs, wahida, one nafs, for male and female, for both male and female. It doesn't differ for either. I now call your attention to another verse that begins in the same way, reminding us to reverence the Almighty in our language, that is the Quranic language, Islamic language is Allah, in the Christian language, God, to reverence the Almighty. And it mentions also that we should be always open and honest with each other and let our speech or our words go straight to the mark. Go straight to the mark. In other words, we are not to beat around the bush. And in such a close relationship as this, that is really a relationship of halves that make up one whole, there is just no room in this intimate, very, very intimate relationship for any secrecy. For secrecy breeds deception, and deception bring ruin. And again, Allah mentions to us a saving source for all relationships in our remaining faithful to our religion and to our Muslim nature. This verse also began with the words, and reverence your guardian Lord, or your guardian evolver and sustainer. And do not die except as a Muslim. Except as a Muslim. Muslim simply means one yielding to the will of Allah. As long as we yield to the will of Allah, Allah himself guarantees our marriage. Now, it's not customary for the preacher in this society to give counseling before there's a problem. But if you have been thinking, my whole sermon, my whole khutbah, nikah, wedding sermon, has been a counseling. And this is the normal procedure in al-Islam. The marriage begins with a counseling. In fact, before they get a counseling from the imam, they get it from their parents. The parents bring the daughter and say, are you sure about this? Can that man give you something? Can he take care of you like I'm doing? So, well, Dad, we'll have to stay in a tool shed for the first week. You tell him to come back and ask for your hand when he can put you in the same kind of house I got you in. Hey, let me talk to that young man. Hey, young man, you're healthy, you got all your muscles, you got your good health, you got your mind. How come you don't have a house for my wife? You want to marry her and you live in a tool shed? Then the tool sheds are for tools. Now, when you're ready to have a woman in your shed, let me know. Yes, and they have to have a dowry. The dowry is a certain amount of money in some form. It can be in the form of jewelry, anything, bond. It can be a pledge as long as you can back it up. Some money, so in case something happened. So what can happen? Why you bring all of this up on a beautiful occasion like this? It's supposed to be wedding cake and icing and songs and music. Because we want it to last. And we want it to be strong and right. Yes. So, he will come and he will make sure that they have a dowry. Say, do you have something to guarantee? Say, well, I don't plan to ever divorce this woman. He will say, like Maurice Chevalier said in that movie. He said, oh, I love you. I want to die with you. I want to grow old and die with you. You know, he will say that, but the man say, oh, yeah, but look, you might die tomorrow. You might die tonight. And she has to live. So what do you have? So he will pledge a dowry. And the dowry is always measured in proportion with the standard, with the means of the male. If he's poor, he's expected just to come up with a token. But he should be marrying a poor. If he's not marrying a poor, then he has to give up some of his superiority. He has to give up some of that degree of superiority. That's no more than justice, isn't it?
That's right.
Yes. If she got the money, she's going to provide, then he can't say, my degree of superiority, sister, over you is in my strength and the amount of mass, amount of wealth I have amassed. She said, you don't have nothing, boy. Then we have to just tuck it and keep going, right? We have a much better society if people wouldn't ask for more than they can have. Never look at a woman who's way up in the sky, brother, if you way down here with us. Don't look for her, unless you're a pimp.
But if you're a decent man who have respect for yourself, don't look for that woman way up in the sky and got everything. Look for a woman down on your level who needs you on all three levels, physical, mental, and spiritual. So as the imam, I'm obligated to ask, is there a dowry or a pledge, and has it been accepted? Is there a dowry or a pledge, and has it been accepted? Yes. There is a dowry, and it has been accepted. I'm going to end the khutbah with the verse that you will find in the invitation from the Quran. And among his signs is this, that he created for you mates from among yourselves, that you may dwell in tranquility with them. And he has put love and mercy between your hearts. Verily, and that are signs to those who reflect. Fakhruddin Abdul Hakim, do you sincerely and solemnly agree and accept to marry Zakiya Muhammad in accordance with Islamic law and the law of the United States of America?
Yes.
Zakiya Muhammad, do you accept sincerely and solemnly agree to marry Fakhruddin Abdul Hakim in accordance with the Islamic law and in accordance with the law of the United States of America? You do not have to recite this three times because I have explained the three. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.